Hey everyone, I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
Writers at RVFTA.com.
And the authors of The Idiot's Guide to RV Vacations.
About 10 years ago, we had a couple of babies and a marriage that was on the rocks.
So we bought an RV and we started camping. The rest, as they say, is history.
Join us as we talk about where to camp, what gear to bring, and the best food to cook.
We'll also keep you dialed in to the latest RV innovations from people in the know.
So pull up a chair and join us around the digital campfire.
This is the RV Atlas. Hey, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the RV Atlas. We are really lucky to be back with Gretchen from Boxy Colonial. She's our special guest today, and she's going to be giving us a trip planner for Prince Edward Island in Canada. We were there last summer right about the same time that she was there, so we had so much fun following her adventures on Instagram and kind of comparing notes, and she really did the trip right. But before we dive in and talk about all her epic adventures up in Canada, a big thank you to our sponsor, Jayco.
Yeah, Jayco, you can see a complete lineup of products. Visit your local dealer or head on over to jayco.com. And also a thank you to Go RVing. To find your way, visit GoRVing.com. Welcome to the show, Gretchen.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much for coming on to share what we consider a bit of a hole in our Canada adventures last year. So for anybody that's listening, we did a couple of podcast episodes on our adventures in Canada last year, in Nova Scotia more specifically. You can go over to rvfta.com and you can search for Nova Scotia and see just like our trip planning advice, like where we stayed at the provincial parks we picked. But when we were in this area near Prince Edward Island, we just drove over to the island for the day and had a wonderful adventure. But you actually camped over there. So we invited you on to tell us how to do Prince Edward Island right.
All right.
So tell us a little bit about the geography of this, because it is a little trickier to get to than some destinations.
It is. And we, I'm going to focus on the Cavendish area because that's where we stayed. You can take, there are two ways to get to Prince Edward Island because it is an island. There is the ferry or there is the Confederation Bridge, which was built not that long ago. I think maybe about 15 years ago. I'm not sure. And we took the bridge over. We actually wanted to take the ferry, but then we had read that with RVs, you can wind up waiting a really long time. So we decided to take the bridge.
Yeah, everybody, you know, I think that, Gretchen, we went into our visit thinking that we would take the ferry there, but then we're really good about talking to locals. Like, that's something we always try to get, like, not just our internet knowledge, but then the down low from people in the area. And every single person we talked to was like, why would you go on the ferry? The bridge is so easy and it's cheaper.
Well, the park ranger at Amherst Shores Provincial Park really just guided us towards taking the bridge. And plus, he said, like, the bridge is beautiful. Like, yeah. It's like a really nice drive going over the bridge. How was it towing over the bridge? Because, I mean, we had detached the trailer and just took the truck.
It was not bad at all. I was nervous about it because they talk about, you know, closes for high winds. I had actually downloaded an app to my phone that tells you about bridge conditions, but it was not a problem at all. And I'm a scaredy cat about that kind of thing, and I was not nervous at all.
And I can't emphasize enough, it is like one of the most lovely drives over a bridge that I can think of. It's pretty magical.
Really, well, because the sides are actually low. So, you know, a lot of bridges, when you're on the bridges, you can't see necessarily a lot, but on there, the sides are low and you can really see
out. In the F-250, we were sort of
Yeah, we were a little bit high. Yeah. So yeah, it's not a bad way to go. So don't think that you're, you know, missing out on something if you do that instead of the ferry. So now, once you actually get over there onto Prince Edward Island, just tell everybody a little bit about the Cavendish area.
Okay, so it's about, if you do take the bridge, it's about 40 minutes from the bridge on the north side of the island. I think it's about an hour and a half from the ferry. And this is an area with lots of beaches. It's the main area where I think there are a couple other units of it, but the main part of Prince Edward Island National Park is here, and some little fishing villages. And it's most famous because it was the inspiration for Anne of Green Gables in Avonlea, where Anne of Green Gables lived. So there's a whole lot of Anne tourism there too.
And it is all like something out of a storybook. I mean, it is just an overdose of charm, really.
It is.
So when you camped here, you stayed at the Cavendish campground. So let's just give everybody an overview of the campground and what it was like camping there.
Okay, so there are two campgrounds in the national park, and Cavendish is the bigger one, and it's also the only one you can stay at if you're over 27 feet, I think. They have over 200 sites. There's kind of two main areas that we saw anyway. There are heavily wooded pull-throughs that the bigger rigs stay at. And then there, if you are a smaller or a tent camper, then you can stay very close to the beach. And those sites are more open, mostly back-end sites, but you're right on the ocean.
Now, in our quick drive through this campground, when we were visiting, we were a little shocked at how tight it felt to us. So we didn't have our toy hauler. We were kind of like, oh, we're glad we don't have our toy hauler there.
To be honest, we didn't see a lot of big rigs in general.
Yeah, so maybe we didn't see this section, but tell us a little about the experience camping here in a bigger rig.
Yes, I have a great story about that. So we booked our site, and they have pictures of all the sites online. Everything looked great. We did notice it said that it was a narrow site. We had one of these wooded pull-throughs, but it only noted that might mean that you would have some trouble with awnings or slide-outs. And we thought, well, we don't have slides. No problem. It's a pull-through. No big deal. We can get in. And it was 82 feet long, I think. So we, by the way, had site A56, in case anyone wants to avoid this one. Then we got there.
Spoiler alert.
Right. So we get there, we pull up to the site, and it's lovely. It's this big private wooded site, super long. And then we notice giant trees on either side of the site, like very close to the actual pad of the site. And there are narrow roads, narrow dirt roads here. There's another site right across from us. So we're looking at it and we're thinking, this is not going to happen. We go ahead and try, because what else are we going to do? The campground's full. And we get stuck on a tree. One of those giant trees. We almost made it. We got the van past it, but then the trailer just rubbed up against this tree.
Oh, because you just didn't have the turning radius, you mean, from right. The narrow path to be able to swing wide
exactly.
enough to get through.
Right. It was just those giant trees. Like, the site was plenty long.
And the toy hauler's 102 inches wide, too. That extra 6 inches might have done you in.
Because they did have this, they said, for up to 35 feet. So we're 34 feet, but I think the toy hauler has a little bit longer turning radius because of where the axle is set. And also, as you said, it's a little bit wider. So I think the average 34-foot trailer probably would have squeaked through. But we ended up, first we called roadside assistance because I wasn't sure we were going to be able to get out. It was just wedged in there. And then I kind of took my youngest kid and fled to the playground because I was sort of
fled.
Having a panic attack at that point. I thought I was not helping. So
these are the worst moments, you know? I mean, everybody listening has had something like this, you know? And you just feel like, you just feel helpless. Like, what are we going to do?
So I want to hear the end of the story. What happened?
So this is where being married to a math teacher who knows geometry came in very handy. What he ended up doing was unhitching and then rehitching the van at a very precise angle so that he could kind of just, as he pulled the van forward, it just kind of came off of the tree just
swung
the right way
out.
Without causing damage. Yeah.
Yeah. We've done that
we've
for our driveway.
We've had to actually do that in our own driveway when we first moved here before we figured out we should go the other way. And then we also had to do that at another campground. We actually had to unhitch and re-angle. So everyone should know that can really help
yes.
you out.
When you start having a panic attack, consider that as one of now, your good options.
I just also want to throw in here, like, I cannot speak to the quality of the KOAs on PEI because we didn't stay at any of them, obviously, and we didn't tour any of them. But there are, I think, like 3 KOAs on PEI, and I'm sure there are other private campground options. So no one
there
should
are.
Panic. You know, I mean,
right.
if you want to go to PEI, this is not the only option if you have a larger
right.
rig. It's well, just obviously the most beautiful option.
Yeah. And I should say there were plenty of sites there where we would have been fine. I think if anyone, aside from avoiding A56, I think the thing to do is if you're close to that 35-foot limit, I would say over 35, because they do have a lot of sites. Not a lot, but some sites that are they say can fit over 35-foot trailers. So I would just go ahead and give yourself an extra few feet and pick one of those, and you should be fine. Because most of the sites we would have been okay in.
All right, this is critical information, and this is why we do these podcasts, right? This is stuff you can't learn from anything except people that have been there in the situation. All right, so once the drama of getting into your site has sort of been met with and dealt with, and you're nicely
and of course,
set up,
Dave was a god for the rest of the trip, right?
The hero, the math hero, right?
Definitely.
All right, tell us about the rest of the campground, just the basics of what amenities are there.
So after that, it was great. Again, our site was very private, very long and pretty wide, because there were trees on either side of it. So it was a great site. I think they're all full hookups. Well, no, not all full hookups, but all of those pull through sites for the bigger rigs are full hookup. And it was $32 to $35 Canadian a night. So great. So that means even cheaper in US dollars. So a great price for these. And the campground itself had a ton going on. It's a big bustling campground. They do have beach access to, I guess it's not a private beach because anyone could go there, but you can only access it from the campground. They have a playground that's a nice newer playground. The bathhouses and laundry were all nicely updated, really nice. And they also had, we really enjoyed the campfire programs that they have a few nights a week. We went to one that was, it was very Canadian. It was the park workers dressed up as trees and told everybody all about trees and had a sing-along.
And how not to back your RVs into them.
Right. They should add that to the campfire program. And then we went to one that was the First Nations people who are indigenous to this whole area, the whole Atlantic Canada area, are the Mi'kmaq. And they had storytellers come in and tell, and they were Mi'kmaq people, and they told stories and did dances and taught the kids some of the dances. And that was really, really cool and really fun to see.
It's a dreamy place to stay. I mean, it really sounds like a wonderful, wonderful place to stay. I'm jealous.
Well, it's also a great location, right? Because you're really close to all the Cavendish attractions at this campground, right? You're not going to be driving a long ways to see everything, which Jeremy mentioned the KOAs before. Like, a lot of them are a little more off the beaten track,
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I mean, it's worth saying, too, and Stephanie and I covered this on the podcast, you know, we stayed at Amherst Shores Provincial Park, and it was an easy day trip.
It was about an hour, about an hour to some of this area. Like, we went to this area last during our day. You know, we kind of circled around the island, ended up north, and then shot home from there. And it was maybe a little bit over an hour back to the campground. So it's really easy. I feel like Prince Edward Island is easy to navigate and easy to jump around. And it felt, when we were planning our trip, like a very remote kind of a place. But when we were up there, we felt like we could get
it. We were surprised at how easy it was.
Absolutely.
So, Gretchen, anything else we should know about the campground before we kind of switch over to some of the fun things to do?
I think that pretty much covers it. I'll probably talk about this more when I talk about what we did there, but there's a hiking trail and also a bike path just right in the campground, which is really nice. So you can, even without a car, get a lot of places in the area.
Another great place for bikes, which we absolutely love. All right. Now, we are going to talk about all the things to do in this area. But first, we want to thank our sponsor, Jayco. Focused on providing a way to create lasting memories, Jayco offers travel trailers, Class A motorhomes, and everything in between. With more standard features and an industry-leading 2-year limited warranty, Jayco will go the distance for your family. Maximize every moment, no matter where the journey takes you. Visit your local Jayco dealer or jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun. Let's talk about some family fun.
Yeah, Gretchen, there's so many fun things to do on PEI. I mean, it really is a classic summer destination for a camping trip. So get us started. What should we do first?
Okay. And I should mention that the campground is only about 40 minutes from Charlottetown. We didn't make it there, but it would be easy to go there for a day too.
And I think that we mentioned in the links I'll put in the show notes to this,
we did a
segment on Charlottetown. So if anybody's interested in that, you can go in and listen to our stuff. But Gretchen, you have all the good Anne of Green Gables stuff dialed in because none of my boys were interested in that.
but we did something that Gretchen didn't do. So I feel a little better
because
you're Nova Scotia and you're Canada trip was a bit more epic and longer than ours. We did kind of a quick hit.
Right. Yeah. You had other big trips that summer. That was our main thing. So, but yeah, we did the Anne of Green Gables stuff, and all of my older boys had read the book, but my youngest, who was 5 at the time, was the most into it. And he knew nothing about Anne of Green Gables before we got there. So they do a good job making it really engaging and fun for kids. There's Green Gables Heritage Place, is where we went. And this is where the house, Green Gables was not a real house, but it was based on a real house that the author, Lucy Maud Montgomery, visited. I think she had family who lived there as a kid. So they've taken this house and restored it to look just like it does, just like it's described in the books. So you can go through and tour the house. It's a self-guided tour, and they have Anne's bedroom set up just like it is in the book and all of that. But they have a lot going on at this site too. It is a National Park Service site. It's part of Prince Edward Island National Park, I believe. And they have, there's a couple of walking trails where you can see things again that Anne talks about in the book. And they also have all kinds of programming during, we found out everything in Canada is July and August. If you're there in the shoulder season, there's nothing going on. But if you're there in July and August, they have all kinds of stuff. We did a field day with Miss Stacy, where someone, you know, costumed interpreters, Anne and one of her teachers took us around and showed us different plants in the area. And then we did a Sunday school picnic where the kids were all could all help make ice cream. And then Anne played old-fashioned games with all the kids. And we found out that my five-year-old is not at all good at three-legged races or sack races. Fell down constantly, but did not get upset. So that was good.
Give him some time.
Yes. He was one of the younger kids, but he had a great time anyway. We were worried that there would be a meltdown, but there was not. He was in good spirits, thanks to Anne's relentless optimism.
Now, as an English teacher, I really love the fact that you keep saying, in the book, in the book, in the book. But for the uninitiated, like the show, the television show was also incredibly famous and incredibly good and a huge part of that whole, you know, ethos of Anne of Green Gables, right?
Yeah, see, I've never even seen the TV show. I've only read the book, so...
Oh, but, my gosh. Yeah. I score one for you. I've only watched the TV show. I've never read the book.
I never saw the TV show either. I was
really?
Yeah,
the
no,
show
I just
is,
read the books growing up.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. We'll have to check it out. You and the boys can watch it when you're...
in between wrestling matches
exactly.
On the living room floor.
Exactly. All right, what else is there to do in the area?
There's a lot of your just typical cheesy tourist traps. It's kind of, I would say it's like the Pigeon Forge of Canada, except it's really not nearly on that scale because it is Canada, but you do have the mini golf. You have, there's like a Ripley's Wax Museum there. And we went to because they have very good marketing and you can see there's a couple of roadside amusement parks that you can see you can't miss from the road. So our youngest spotted that and talked the whole time we were there about how he wanted to go ride the roller coaster. So we finally took him over to the Sandspit amusement park and did a few rides with him. And you can buy, you don't have to pay for the whole day to get in. You can buy just a coupon book. So we were able to get away with just a few rides there. But it's just your typical,
again,
you know,
because they're Canadian. Because in the United States, you'd have to buy expensive right. Day-long tickets.
That, isn't that the worst when they spot those things? And you're like, no, we just had that down in South Carolina. There was this little amusement park, like really little and dinky. And
we
Wes
had to drive
caught,
by it every
yeah,
time.
And he just... Can we go? It was like the fun zone, you know? Can we go to that? And the whole time I was just like, no.
It looked like the type of place where like a Stephen King story is set.
I don't want to go to the fun zone.
But to Wesley, it was like, you know, Nirvana.
We got away with it this time, but you are, it's nice that you brought game over there. All right. What kind of like hiking and, I mean, this is a national park area. So what else is there to do in terms of the national park?
Right. Once you get off the main drag, you can enjoy nature without all of the tourist trappings. And right next to the campground, we did the Homestead Trail, which I think is about 6.5 kilometers. And I'm not as well versed in kilometers versus miles now, but I guess that's about 4 miles. And it was a nice
easy
loop.
Yeah, I cut it in half and add one on. That's my really technical math major way of doing it.
Well, it was manageable for our kids is what I know about the distance. So because it was very flat. So that takes you kind of through some different kind of natural areas. You see, you know, you're overlooking the ocean some of the time, but you also go through some marsh and forest. And it was just a really pretty little hike. You can also take bikes on there, but it's not really mountain biking, but you would probably want a fairly heavy duty bike that's set up for because it's not paved. But there were a lot of pretty wildflowers to look at on that walk too. So we did that. There are, again, at Green Gables Heritage Place, there are a couple of nice little walks that are great for kids through the woods. And what we did that we really enjoyed was, again, that bike path that goes from the campground. You can take, it's a 1.1 kilometer ride on a bike path along a paved path to Cavendish Beach from the campground, which is probably the most popular beach there. And it's got, you know, lots of sand. It's a big wide beach and dunes. And it also has like an ice cream stand and bathhouses there. So it's got all the amenities and you can spend the day at the beach there and be really comfortable.
Did your kids get in and really swim? Because the day we were there, it was like kind of windswept and chilly and it was great. It was lovely, but it wasn't like what we would consider a beach day.
I'm trying to remember. I don't think they did, but they're not huge swimming kids, so they wouldn't unless, you know, like, it's not unusual for them not to get in. We actually had pretty warm weather while we were there. We were there mid-July.
Yeah, no, we had warm weather, and in fact, the Canadians were acting like it was like a heat wave because it touched into the 80s, I think.
Yeah.
But I think that just the water was so much colder than we're used to, and we couldn't get over that hurdle on the beaches. Like, they put their feet in, and we're like, okay, that's good, you know?
Yeah, and there's like those three hardy souls out there swimming, yeah. And then like 500 people on the beach. Yeah. Not 500, but yeah.
Well, they are hardy. They're used to it. All right, now, we are going to talk about a couple of great food options to check out in this area. But first, we want to thank our sponsor, Go RVing. If you're interested in the RV lifestyle, if you're listening to this because you're like in your shopping phase or you're thinking about, you know, getting out there and finding a good RV for you, but you don't know the difference between a travel trailer and a fifth wheel, you want to go over to GoRVing.com. They have some really invaluable resources for just educating you about the variety of different RVs out there.
I love to use the compare RVs tab.
Right. So you can use these different like little questionnaires to kind of figure out what RV is best for you.
You can pretend you're shopping for a fifth wheel and a class A.
That's
and a class
Jeremy.
A.
Jeremy can't really shop
it's
for a
It's a great way to window
RV.
Shop.
You can window shop. But also, you know, like sometimes I just love their simple pictures and sketches of the different kinds of RVs, because when people are first getting started, they can feel a little bit overwhelmed by everybody throwing all of these terms out. Class A, class C, class B. And those people like us forget that
it's like,
you know,
it's like a lingo.
It's a different language.
It's like a jargon.
Right. So that's a really good place. The Compare RVs tab is a good place to get started to just get your lingo down.
And it's a safe zone. No one's going to judge you if you don't
Nobody's
know.
Nobody's going to be funny you that
are.
You don't know. Exactly. As opposed to those awful Facebook groups out there. All right. Now find your way, go RVing, and go get yourself some good food while you travel, because that's one of our favorite things to do.
All right. So right near the campground on the sort of the main drag, we ate at the Lost Anchor, and that was just kind of your standard seafood, but it was really good and had like nice decorating inside. And then Avonlea Village is right there too, a really quick drive from the campground, and they have several eating options. My understanding is it used to actually be more of a theme park with like costumed interpreters running around. So it's kind of themed to look like the village Anne lived in. But now it's mostly just restaurants and shopping. But they had a surprisingly good pizza place there called Pizza Piatto with like Neapolitan style pizza. So we ate there one night and that was really good. And they have a few other places there. Probably our favorite dining experience there was we took the bike path all the way out to North Rustico. And there's a big beach there. I think it was about 10 kilometers bike ride. And it is a little bit hilly. You kind of expect by the ocean it's going to be all flat biking, but this was up on the bluff, so it was going up and down a little more than I prefer for a bike ride, but it was doable. And we ate there at On the Dock Eatery, which is a really nice little seafood place. They had a really good fish and chips. And there are a couple of, in North Rustico Harbor, there are a couple of fancier restaurants too that you might not want to necessarily want to bring young kids to, but have really good reviews if you're looking for a date night or something.
We did North Rustico, and it is a lovely little village.
Yeah, well, this is where we ended up. Like I said, we spent our day kind of working our way up to the north, and then we jetted home after having dinner in this area. And we were lucky enough that we were there on Canada Day.
It was so much fun.
In North Rustico, right, like they had their big Canada Day celebration, and we were just like, oh my gosh, this is just lovely.
And there was all these like charming old men dressed head to toe in like Canadian flag outfits.
They do it right. They really are so much better. They're better at Canada Day than we are at the 4th of July.
I think they are.
The end.
And I have to say again, just like I said when we covered this area, the Canadians were really lovely and welcoming.
They were
so kind.
And yeah.
Also just so conversational and chatty in a way that maybe like people in New Jersey are not.
No.
Even people in Georgia are not. And you know, we have that reputation, but I thought I knew friendly people until I got to Canada. And then I was like, oh, no.
So you had that same experience. It wasn't just us. Like, it was just amazing the way people would just stop and be like, hi, how are you? And, like, want to talk to you.
Have like a half hour conversation, not even just say hi and be friendly. Everyone wanted to like get to know you.
That's what happened to us in North Rustico.
In North Rustico. Like, I think I told the story.
We were on a street corner and it was like a half hour conversation with just a lovely couple that were out walking around.
Right, we asked them a question about a restaurant and they decided that we were just going to get to know each other.
Exactly. Exactly. And they honestly, like, I think they would have come to dinner with us, but they just had dinner.
I know. It was really just this phenomenal experience that I've never had anywhere
else.
One
of my cousins moved to Canada and has become a Canadian citizen. And when I was younger, I was always like, well, why would you do that? It's cold, you know? And now I totally get it now.
Yeah, because they're just nice people. All right. Gretchen, thank you so much for giving us this trip planner for the Cavendish area of Prince Edward Island. Everybody should really have Nova Scotia on their radar for an RV trip. I mean, it's like nowhere else. It's such an amazing experience culturally and also, you know, geographically.
It's a bucket list RV trip for sure. Thank
you
so much.
Thanks, Gretchen. We'll see you at the campground.
See you at the campground.
See ya.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of the RV Atlas. And a big thanks to the sponsors of this show, Jayco, Bass Pro Cabela's, Thetford, Go Power, and Go RVing. We appreciate their support in creating educational and inspirational RV content.
You can also find links to everything mentioned in this episode over at rvfta.com, plus hundreds of blog posts on everything from gear recommendations to our favorite camping recipes.
If you enjoy our show, please leave us a review wherever you listen, and make sure to get social with us on Facebook at The RV Atlas and on Instagram at Jeremy and Stephanie. Plus, we've got the friendliest campers around in our private Facebook group. So check it out.
Until next time, I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Stephanie.
And we'll see you at the campground.
See you at the campground.